It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. This Saturday will mark the debut of a new film called Ghosts of Amistad, In the Footsteps of the Rebels. It's a documentary by Tony Buba based on Marcus Rediker's book, The Amistad Rebellion, An Atlantic Odyssey of Slavery and Freedom. It chronicles a trip to Sierra Leone last year to visit the home villages of the people who seized the slave schooner Amistad in 1839. The film is being shown on Saturday at the Regent Square Theater at 4:15, and I'm joined now in Studio A by legendary filmmaker Tony Buba, the Bard of Braddock, as he is called, or as the New York Times famously called him. Tony, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Well, thank you. Thanks for the introduction, Paul.
And also with us is Marcus Rediker. Marcus, good to have you back with us.
Thank you, Paul. Good to be here.
Marcus, you wrote your book without traveling to Sierra Leone, I believe. So what made you want to go there last year? Why was it important?
It was important because this is a piece of history that stresses the African origins of the Amistad Rebellion. And we felt that there were things that we could learn from contemporary Sierra Leoneans about that history. So we went to really interview people and learn about how they have preserved this story.
And what were you hoping to find?
We wanted to learn more about the individuals who were involved in the rebellion. We wanted to learn more about their culture. And we wanted to find key places in the story to experience those places.
And for people who don't know the story, explain the historical significance of the Amistad Rebellion.
The rebellion took place in 1839. And the Amistad Africans, who captured this Cuban slaving schooner, managed to sail it all the way to northern Long Island, where they were taken by the U.S. Navy and thrown in jail and charged with piracy and murder. As it happened, abolitionists, those people who wanted to get rid of the institution of slavery, came to the jail and together with the Amistad Africans organized a successful legal campaign, which resulted, to everyone's great surprise, in a Supreme Court ruling in their favor in 1841, which then allowed them to return home to Sierra Leone in 1842. This was a very big event in the struggle against slavery.
An incredible story. And they ended up in the – they were brought up north.
Exactly. They sailed themselves far enough north that they were in a region where slavery was already diminished and actually in New York State abolished.
So they did this by design.
I think they did, because the first thing they asked when they came ashore in New York is this slavery country? So they had an idea that some parts of the Atlantic had slavery and other parts didn't.
It's a remarkable story. It's chronicled in your book. So then it's a matter of what can we do to take this story into the present and capture it on film as a documentary. So, Tony, talk about collaborating with Marcus and how this whole idea began to germinate.
Well, Marcus gave me a call. He says, I have an opportunity to do a lecture in Sierra Leone. And he asked me, would you want to document it? And I said, yeah, when? When do we leave? And so it was just immediately I wanted to do it. I wanted to work with Marcus. I mean, I'm a great fan of his work. And my wife actually knows Marcus better than I do, Jan, from University of Pittsburgh.
Who was also along on the trip.
Yeah, she was also along on the trip as the data wrangler. And yeah, so I just immediately wanted to go. And we really didn't know. I mean, what I did tell Marcus was that I don't know if we'll get anything out of this because it's the most unprepared I've ever been for a shoot. It was not like going there 6 months ahead of time and lining everything up, then go back and doing the re-interviews. We just went cold. And so it was just taking a shot in the dark. And, you know, and it's one of these things that luckily, it worked out. I mean, it was very difficult.
The region that you were traveling in was a hot spot for the Civil War in Sierra Leone between 1991 and 2002. What did the people there know of the history of the towns and villages?
Well, it's one of these things when you're doing oral history, I think the timing is critical. I mean, probably if Marcus was able to go 10 years earlier, we'd probably have gotten a lot more information. I mean, with people dying and then the war. And it's you know, luckily we just went there now because of another, now with the Ebola crisis, who knows who right. passed in you know, it'd be gone. But what to me was fascinating in making the film, as you saw it, the number of people with cell phones that were also documenting the interview.
I saw that. I had a chance to watch the film, and you're, there are people – of course, the villagers are all curious about you and Marcus, and they're gathering around, and they're capturing it on their cell phones. Have you been in touch? Obviously, you were lucky to go when you did because this is a region that was hit hard by the Ebola outbreak. Have you been in touch with some of the people you met there?
I stay in touch with our two drivers, Cherno and Jabril, by texting and also with Idris through Facebook. But every once in a while, I get a message from Cherno. And Jabril, I hadn't heard from in a while, so I got worried, and I did send him a message and asked him if anything was wrong, and his son just died.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, and his daughter was sick, but she seems to be doing okay now. So, yeah, I do stay in touch there. And it was just yeah, it's one of these things where I look at the footage now, I'm sure Marcus does too, and trying to figure how many people have passed.
How much worse was the longstanding poverty that exists, that we see in this film, that was caused, that is a residual effect of the slave trade, Marcus?
Well, it's very important to know the history. And, of course, Sierra Leone, the region called Sierra Leone, has been dominated by outsiders for hundreds of years. It was a British colony. One of the legacies of British imperialism is that we have a country with literally no infrastructure. That's medical infrastructure as well as the physical arrangement of roads and that sort of thing. So the underdevelopment has quite a history. And, of course, the slave trade is part of that.
And Marcus wanted to get that British imperialism into the film. And this took Tom Dubinsky, our editor, forever. We had to work out. I mean, it took I don't know how many cuts to get it to work in perfectly. He says, this has to be in there. This has to be in there.
Well, there's a point in the film where you go to the British slave trading fortresses in Sierra Leone. And these structures are – it's amazing to see what they built and for completely insidious purposes. And, I mean, there are cannons and the remnants of – you know, presumably to ward off anybody that would try to free the people that they were enslaving, who were terrified to be there. And the echoes of that horror, I mean, it comes out in the way it's shot. What was it like to be there and to walk through it and to feel the spirits of the people that passed through there?
Well, I mean, one in caption, I want to thank John Rice and Idris Kapangi, John was the director of photography, and Idris was a videographer for capturing those images. But Marcus can explain really.
Well, I guess the most important point, which the film I think does convey, is that the legacy of the slave trade is still very much alive. In other words, we pretend that that part of history is safely in the past, but people in Sierra Leone live with its consequences every day, and I would submit that we in this country live with its consequences every day. But to actually be there on Bunce Island with that huge fortress that is now in ruins, that, Paul, was a really chilling and eerie experience. If you think of the tens of thousands of people who passed through there being loaded onto slave ships and sent to a fate that they really couldn't imagine, it makes you think. It's very deeply moving.
And it's hard to imagine, really, what was in the hearts and minds of the people that the enslavers that somehow justified. I mean, they made a lot of money doing this, but at what point are you able to justify it in your own mind? Obviously, they were, but others were not, and that enabled the whole episode of the Amistad to play out. And we're talking about the film Ghosts of Amistad in the Footsteps of the Rebels, a documentary by Tony Buba, who's with us in studio. It's based on the book by Marcus Redeker, who's with us as well. His book is called The Amistad Rebellion, An Atlantic Odyssey of Slavery and Freedom. And we talked about that book when it came out a couple years ago. We had you here, Marcus. And when you say Amistad Africans, you're talking about the people who are the descendants of the – or might be descendants of the people of the Amistad who created that rebellion?
Well, I'm referring specifically to the people who made the rebellion. When I say the Amistad Africans, I mean those people from Sierra Leone who ventured to Cuba, where they were loaded onto this vessel, the Amistad, and who then captured it and sailed it to freedom. They're the ones who made such an important contribution to this struggle against slavery.
It is an amazing story, and I'm glad you clarified that.
It was interesting, too, for me as a documentary filmmaker, because you know Paul is an interviewer, you just usually ask a direct question. But traveling with historians and making sure that what we're getting, they're also doing the research that isn't tainted by asking leading questions. You went into a village and you asked, not did you know Singh Bay, any relatives here, because you don't know what answer you might get. It's more the history of the village. And once the history of the village is given, if there's any reference to anybody who might have been with the Amistad, then questions were asked. It was a whole different interviewing technique. And then also I was in shooting it, you notice there's a lot of wide shots. And it was really stuck in my mind from an African student I had when I taught it to filmmakers. They were building the PPG building downtown. He came back with all of his footage. There were no close-ups. Everything was wide. And this was how he saw. This is what. So I try to keep in that style of that filmmaking.
And as you're talking to these people, there is a reluctance. I mean, they don't necessarily want to just jump in and have the conversation with you, even though you know you're engaging them in a perfectly normal American way. It wasn't necessarily normal for them. And part of it, from what we learn in the film, is there is a high regard for the spirits of ancestors. Explain this, Marcus.
Well, in Mende culture, and the villages we were visiting were made up of Mende people. This is the largest cultural group in Sierra Leone. The spirits of ancestors are living beings who are present in the society. And so consequently, it was of interest to people that we had stories about their ancestors. So there was curiosity on their part to know what we had learned from things that we had studied.
And were you surprised that people seemed to know so little about the slave trade there?
Well, it was uneven. In some villages, quite a bit was known. For example, in Gendema, which was the center of King Shaka, the African slave trader. This was his home village. The town chief, who was probably one of his descendants, knew a tremendous amount about the slave trade that his ancestor had engaged in. And in other places, people knew about the Amistad case. But we also, as we say in the film, met several villages where elders had recently died and taken knowledge of this history with them.
And what did you learn about the man who led the revolt?
We learned quite a bit. One of the things that we learned, which had been totally unknown to historians before, was that Singh Bay, as he was called, that's his Mende name, he's known in the American case as Sinke, had actually organized a rebellion on Lomboko Island before he got on the slave ship, before the Amistad. So this is really a very important piece of evidence that this man was very determined to have his freedom and engaged in several revolts in order to make it happen.
And a good part of the film is you're spent trying to get to that island. And I don't want to give away too much of the film, but that becomes an interesting aspect of the film. And again, it is a documentary called Ghosts of Amistad, In the Footsteps of the Rebels, by filmmaker Tony Buba and Marcus Redeker, who it's based on his book, The Amistad Rebellion, An Atlantic Odyssey of Slavery and Freedom. The Amistad Rebellion, an amazing chapter in history, and the story still obviously relevant and talked about and followed up on in this documentary. The film, Ghost of Amistad, In the Footsteps of the Rebels, will be premiering on Saturday. That's this Saturday, November 15th at the Regent Square Theater at 4:15. Tony Buba, Marcus Redeker, thank you so much for taking the time to visit. Congratulations on a great film.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Paul.
Thank you, Paul.
Coming up, an interview with actor George Takei, who played Sulu on Star Trek. He's in Pittsburgh for a special appearance with the symphony, and he joins us next. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.